Pop Health Podcast is presented by 24 Hour Home Care.
We expect to be able to email an issue or text someone about an issue that we're having. I have this problem with my washer. Can you fix it? And I want to email somebody. Well, I have this problem with my rash. I want to email somebody about it. And
right.
Thinking about, well, we want a response for that. And yet when you purchase a product, it's one thing that you expect to get that,
right.
that service back on it. But you're purchasing healthcare.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pop Health Podcast. This is your host, Zach Morgan. You may be hearing the term independent physician association, some called IPAs, or risk-bearing, or delegated, or capitated models a lot more lately. The reason for that is that as healthcare organizations continue to merge, groups have begun taking on more and more risk, capitated risk for large patient populations. One challenge for independent physicians is that they typically can't keep up with these larger organizations, and that has spurred the growth of larger organizations called IPAs, or independent physician associations. These organizations allow independent physicians to come together to get some negotiating power and also centralize some of the admin responsibilities. My conversation today is with Paul Durr, CEO of Sharp Community Medical Group, one of the largest risk-bearing organization IPAs in the country. And I'm excited to share with you our conversation, and hopefully you learn a little bit and also can take some knowledge from this, as I'm sure you'll begin to be hearing those terms a lot more in the future. As always, thanks so much for joining us. So, Paul, one thing that we like to do to start off each episode is we like to ask our guests if you can share with the audience something that people might not know about you, maybe something outside of work or outside of your professional persona.
Yeah, I would love to share the fact that I have six children. So
okay.
It's kind of odd in this day and age where most people have two or three, but I have six. The oldest is soon to be 30 and the youngest is 16. So
that that makes for quite a holiday time.
It does,
yes.
And especially I still have four of them that are living at home, so two of them are away. My oldest one has three kids, so I have three grandkids as well. And so with technology today, you can certainly FaceTime them and be able to be a part of their lives, even though you're a few thousand miles away.
Right, right. And so what is the breakdown of daughters and sons?
Yeah, so it's a boy, two girls, boy, two girls.
Okay.
So quickly realized that we were going to be outnumbered with regards to any of the male testosterone being able to have any influence in our family. So, you know, we stopped at six. So,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. Okay, so outside of your little bit of your family background, can you give us a little bit of idea of your professional background and how did you initially get involved with healthcare in general, and then with Sharp?
Yeah, so I grew up in Connecticut, actually. And so part of my background is that I am a certified public accountant, and I grew up in Connecticut. My mom was a nurse and actually worked in skilled nursing facilities. So this was back about 40 years ago. And I remember going with her to visit her when she was working. And just the love and the passion that she had for her patients really left an impression on me. I came to San Diego to go to school for health reasons and was able to go to University of San Diego, so a Torero, and was wanted to get a job and got into accounting and worked in public accounting, but realized that my calling was really more for a passion to help people, and sort of moved over into an opportunity to come into Sharp Healthcare as an internal auditor. So in public accounting, I didn't have a lot of healthcare clients, but working at, I did have internal audit experience. So I was able to come into Sharp Healthcare and internal audit. Sort of grew up within Sharp Healthcare. So I've been at Sharp Healthcare for 28 years now and started internal audit and then kind of developed the managed care finance department. And then as Sharp Community Medical Group was growing, Sharp Community Medical Group is 30 years old as in next year. And so that created an opportunity for me to grow as Sharp Community grew. So
yeah. And Sharp is one of the major, maybe 4 to 5 health systems down in San Diego, or maybe that 4 to 5 is being generous, but Sharp is one of the major health systems that covers most of San Diego County or all of San Diego County. One thing before we dive into it, for people who may not be initiated with kind of the healthcare culture down in San Diego, it presents a lot of unique challenges to just about anywhere else and unique opportunities as well. First of all, can you tell the audience a little bit about what some of those unique challenges are that healthcare organizations in San Diego face?
Yeah, San Diego, we always pride ourselves as being unique and sort of isolated because we have the ocean on one side, we have Mexico on the southern side, and the desert out to the eastern side, and Camp Pendleton, which kind of separates us from Orange County and LA. But I think what is unique about San Diego is the diversity that we have. So we have a lot of diverse cultures, diverse people in San Diego, and so taking care of those patients becomes a challenge for us. We have a number of different ethnicities and languages that we have to work with the people and our patients. We have patients, for example, that will live in Mexico and they work in the U.S. and have insurance in the U.S. So how do we follow up with them when they're across the border? And so staying connected with them becomes more of a challenge. We have a number of military families that are part of San Diego as well. And they have, a lot of the retirees have insurance through one of our commercially insured plans. And so, but they will get some of their medications through the military.
Right.
And so how do we coordinate and making sure that that information is being coordinated to us on the provider side? So whether it be Sharp or one of the other local health systems, that is one of the challenges that we have. The VA is a big component of healthcare in San Diego, but sharing that information becomes more of a challenge.
Yeah. And just geographically, it's a huge county. And so you've got, you know, you've got even a Sharp hospital out in Grossmont that covers that right. kind of immediate area, but seems to be kind of a catch-all for a lot of the less incorporated areas out to the east.
Yeah, it is the busiest emergency room, than I believe, in the state. And so it incorporates all of East County, to your point. Anything that is a major accident or anything will be transferred to Grossmont. And, you know, we do have a number of trauma centers here in San Diego. But, East County and then South Bay. So Chula Vista, Sharp Chula Vista, is a brand new hospital that's being built down there to take care of the ever-growing patient population down in Chula Vista area and our South Bay area. South Bay is continuing to grow, certainly further east. Is an opportunity for growth. And again, with the number of patients that cross the border, is an opportunity for us to continue to care for them as well.
Yeah. And with some of those unique challenges, the other thing that people may or may not know about San Diego is that it's looked to almost nationwide as kind of a poster child for what collaboration can do and what sharing information can do across health systems and public agencies. Can you talk a little bit about some of those efforts and how they're truly unique and kind of revolutionary?
Yeah, I think that, one of the things that we pride ourselves is trying not to duplicate too many efforts within San Diego. So one of the big things that was created was San Diego Health Connect, which is a HIE sharing that was initiated through a grant that UCSD actually received from the federal government. And it was an opportunity to bring all of the hospital systems and potential medical groups into sharing clinical information on patients. And so we're able to do that. That continues to work today, and all of the hospitals are participating in that. I think of other joint programs that we have is, you know, there's a one regional burn center that we have. We've jointly done a number of programs for transplants and bone marrow and liver with UCSD, for example, and Sharp. I think the other piece is that we do look at Rady Children's Hospital being maybe the primary children's hospital in San Diego. And so we've kind of worked with the children's specialist to provide their service to both Scripps patients and to Sharp patients and to UCSD. The
right.
physicians that were faculty of UCSD joined to be part of Rady Children's. And so that was a collaboration to say, well, we don't need to have multiple children's specialists in town. Let's coordinate all that care at one major facility, which we've done. And so there is a lot of partnership in working on how we can tackle healthcare overall.
Yeah.
And I think there's collaboration on how we can work on how we can deal with other social determinant issues as well, which is another major factor. We've
right.
tried to look at, you know, we partner, for example, at Sharp, we partner with 211.
Right.
It's a big local organization that is a nonprofit that helps coordinate multiple services. But there's a number of services, agencies, nonprofit or agencies that we partner with to try to make ourselves available, provide community resources to patients.
Yeah. And before we get too far off of it, for those that may not know, how big of a deal is it that the healthcare systems share information across each other? Is that common or is that pretty unique?
I think it is somewhat unique. I think that, you know, we still look at each other as somewhat competitors,
sure.
obviously, because we still want to grow our individual market share. But I think there is a realization that we can work together. We're all community assets. You
yeah.
know, for the most part, all of us are nonprofit health systems, and we're here for the community, and that's what we're entrusted to do, is to provide health to the community. Yes, we both need, all of us need to ensure that we have enough full-paying patients to make sure that we can provide the care that's needed and invest in our infrastructure to provide the future needs of our community. But I think there is more of a sharing here than I would think elsewhere.
Yeah. And just before we get too far off of it, you touched on 211. I was actually going to ask you about that a little bit, but can you give just kind of a high level idea for people who may not know, one, that it's 211, like you can dial the phone number 211,
right.
but just kind of a high level idea of what they coordinate and how they draw in even like nonprofit or some of those social services?
Yeah, so 211 is an organization in San Diego. It's a nonprofit organization, 501c3, that basically has access to food, to various community resources, whether it's you know, abuse issues or things like that, that they make themselves available to anyone that calls 211. So
right.
all you have to do is literally dial 211, and you have a team of people that will give patients access to whether it be food, housing, social issues, mental health issues, and those types of things. We at Sharp have partnered with them. We did a pilot program out of Grossmont Hospital, and Sharp Community is actually doing a pilot with some of our physicians and how we work with 211 and really focused on the food insecurity types of questions related
sure.
to whether patients have enough food to provide the necessary health nutrition that they need in order to live appropriately. And so I think that that's been a great partnership, and it recognizes that we don't need to reinvent that wheel. We can use a resource that's already existing.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that I do always like to talk to people with various backgrounds about who head larger organizations is that there's a delicate balance of clinical and business required for someone in a position like yours. How do you, coming from, you know, background as a CPA, how do you balance managing the clinical side of an organization this large that has to focus on both?
Yeah, so I think it's recognizing that there you need to have a margin. So no margin, no business, right? So
yeah.
you can't have a mission without having a margin. And so really it is that balance that you recognize that as long as you surround yourself with a team of wonderful physicians and care providers, that you can provide great care. What you want them focused on is actually providing care.
Right.
You know, and all of the business side of it needs to be handled by people that understand the business world, especially nowadays with medical learning and information, is that there's so much specialization needed by the medical professionals to really concentrate on providing the great care. They don't really have the time and energy really to put into learning all of the business side of it. And so what I think that my role is to really help provide that guidance and from a business perspective and really develop a trust and relationship with our physician partners and our clinical partners to recognize that they have a piece to play. And my role is to provide that business insight to them, to provide the knowledge of what's going on in the industry from the federal government to the state government to insurers and how we can continue to provide that care to patients and thinking outside the box of being different rather than just being more focused on the clinical side. So I think it's a great partnership.
Yeah.
It's a unique partnership that you gain by developing trust and relationship to providers. Obviously, not knowing the clinical side of it, I've learned a lot based on my tenure at Sharp Healthcare and working with physicians to know that, you know, what's important, what measurements are important, but also how do we then motivate people to change. And that really gets into whether it's motivating patients, whether it's motivating physicians, providers to actually do things differently that will create a better outcome. And so that's that balance between clinical and business.
Yeah, allowing them to be the experts in their field.
Exactly.
That's actually a great transition into something I wanted to talk to you about. We like to ask a lot about technology here on the show. You have seen Sharp grow over the past 20 plus years that you've been here, Sharp and SCMG. How is technology impacting the day-to-day operations, and kind of, are there certain things that excite you about the way that technology is shaping the operations and the healthcare delivery here?
Yeah, I think so. For technology is definitely going to be something that we all have to come to grips with, is how do we incorporate that into the delivery of healthcare? One of the things that we've done as an IPA, an independent physician group, Sharp Community Medical Group, we invested in an electronic health record. So we were probably one of the first IPAs to do that, where the actual group itself purchased an EMR. And we are adopting our providers onto that EMR because we knew that we needed to have some common platform for us to be able to share patient information and to share best practices and better manage the overall care of those patients. It's easier for big groups that are staff model medical groups, whether it be Kaiser, Rees-Steely, and other groups like that, to purchase something because they're all employed and they work for that environment. Right. When you're an independent group, you know, each independent doctor office is doing their own thing. So what we did is we recognized that in order to be ahead of that curve, we needed to kind of have that common platform. Since we did that, which was a number of years ago, we've now recognized that it would be nice to be integrated with the health system. So we're actually going through a transition right now onto the Sharp Healthcare system, which is the Cerner platform. Sure. And so we're moving our physicians off of the platform that we had purchased onto that platform. So we're going to be integrated with the hospital system and have an integrated medical record system. So I think the first thing when I think about is technology is how do we integrate that? But I think the other challenge with that is that the EMR's technologies were built more for revenue cycle and maybe for quality metrics. It really wasn't built for the physician as well as it could be. Yeah. So I think where technology will go is you'll see continued enhancements and providing better tools and making it more user-friendly for the physician. I think the other thing will be is how do you incorporate wearable devices and other technology that exists for devices that are in patients' homes?
Right.
How do you integrate that into the EMR, and how do you integrate it into population health and management of patient care? And I think that where you look at what is happening with Google and with Apple and all of those technological companies, how they're investing in that, and how are they going to develop a solution that we as care providers are going to need to adopt? The thing that we have is that we're connected with the patients. Eventually, they're going to need care from a physician or a practitioner, but we are not technology experts. So again, looking at how do we leverage the technology experts that are out there, use their knowledge base of what they're developing and incorporate it into patient care.
Yeah. So that's obviously a huge investment. What did the process of communicating between the physicians and the healthcare system look like before the EMR was integrated together?
So what it was, we tried to build interfaces as much as we could to our system. And luckily, we had purchased a system that was similar to our sister organization. But it was a different installation altogether.
Right.
So we had built interfaces for that. So when you mostly are aligned with a health system, you can build those interfaces. It does take time. Now we're going to be on a whole, it'll be an integrated system. So it'll be one system, which I think in the future is probably where we need to be.
Yeah.
But the historical was labor intensive. We recognized that for the medical group itself, we wanted to be connected amongst ourselves, primaries with specialists and and being able to share that information. We recognize that most of the care is done in an outpatient setting, so those patients that do get admitted, we want that information to be integrated, so we were able to integrate that information. It wasn't as critical as maybe the outpatient services, so integrating primary care with specialty, which was we saw as more of an important need for us to do rather than necessarily connect with the hospital. But if we can have the best of both worlds where we have it all integrated, well, then that's what we want to do, and that's where we're going to. And so that'll be a big plus for us.
Right. And you have the unique perspective, too, like you said, of representing a lot of physicians. Are you starting to see the embrace of things like telemedicine or virtual visits or things like even text messages or things like that among physicians?
Yeah, we do see that. We do have a number of physicians that are doing telemedicine themselves. So we have a couple of primary care physicians that have adopted their own platform of being able to do a televideo visit with a patient and with their patients, and kind of unique in that experience because they know it needs to be HIPAA compliant and all that, and they're meeting all those standards. And we have another physician that's using another platform for that. I think overall, televideo is going to be something that will continue to grow. It's still unsure as to yet how well it's going to be adopted. We're not seeing great adoption in that right now, but I think it will be something that we do know that the consumer, the younger folks, do want that convenience and access. And so that's going to make it easier for them to get into for basic needs and then, you know, be referred off. We've partnered with a company that does provide televideo visit services in addition that we offer to our patients that provide that service to them. But I think that is going to be a continued growing area, and I think that the more devices that you can incorporate into your smartphone will also make that a little bit better for that televideo visit because you'll be able to capture information from that. I think that will further refine itself over time, but will be something that our physicians need to adopt and our providers need to adopt.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. I want to talk to you specifically about some questions I have about SCMG.
We're going to do something a little bit different during the break today. Paul and I actually had a really interesting discussion while we took the break during the show, and I got permission to share it with you here. So I'm going to go ahead and share our conversation during the break before we hop back into the show. Enjoy.
It must be that one of the challenges of all the technology is, like you said, that a lot of the systems are built for revenue cycle and things, but even just billing for some of those new things as it comes up, I bet it doesn't keep up with the technology anyway.
No, and that's what you see, I think, with CMS is that, you know, CMS has just recently added televideo visits, right, to be able to be compensated for, I believe, in the what's proposed for 2019. And so that is the challenge, is that keeping up with that and making sure, well, how do you get compensated for that? How do you document that?
Right.
How do you incorporate that? And I think it's going to be something that people want, but I don't know.
I mean,
that'll be the thing, Zach. I mean, where do people want that? I mean, if you're kind of feeling miserable, you kind of want that to be able
right.
to access that care. But at the same time, if it's more major, you want to be actually go in to have the empathy of a person. You
sure.
can't really get that over a phone
right.
or a
right.
computer or something like that.
Right.
So I do think that that is going to be somewhat the challenge that's used with that.
Yeah.
You know, Sharp just did a consumerism study and found that people want access. People are using online technology. So whether that's to schedule appointments, to refill medications and all of that, the televideo visits are coming. Reese Steele does a lot with that, and they're doing more with it. Kaiser is doing it. And I think, again, you have the opportunity with large organizations, coordinated medical groups that can provide that service. When you have a group like SCMG, who's a bunch of independent doctors,
yeah.
that's more of a challenge.
Sure.
How do they provide that service and provide that access and not to be left out about that?
Sure.
So that's something I guess we'll talk about. But that's one of the challenges for SCMG
yeah.
and independent doctors is how do you provide that platform?
Right, right. Yeah, personally, I mean, I'm not, the telemedicine, I guess, is fine. I'm actually just more excited about that, even with my own physician there, just far more responsive, even with email. Like, yeah, that's fine. Now that I can contact them and usually get like a response like that day or next day or something, like that's really more useful for me than...
It is, but you think about it from the physician side, you know, the burden it puts on the physician now, because to your point, I mean, and we could talk about it, is that, you know, is that does the physician get compensated for that? So they're providing great care, and the expectation that we have in the electronic world is that we do want instantaneous response, right? Yeah. So if I send an email to a physician, you kind of want them to hopefully respond back. And what's the expectation? Certainly by the end of the day. Well, if you think about their day and they're working, so they're providing care to all these patients that are actually physically showing up to their office, then they have to document everything at night, and then they have to answer emails. Do they get compensated for the email? And maybe, maybe not, but yet, are they comfortable providing that care, answering that question, because it might be deemed to be you're providing care, which you're not, but it's advice. I agree with you, Zach, though. It's totally what we expect. I mean, I've emailed my physician. I've texted my physician because I have that. And you're spot on, is that that's what people want.
Yeah.
And we expect to get sort of a response back. But if you sit in the shoes of the provider, that's a little bit different, because now you're... Are you practicing medicine?
Right.
Well, yes, you are, because you're providing that medical advice. I don't know if you're recording this, but that would very be...
Yeah, well, you, I mean, I am. Well,
which
I
is good, but you could
this.
Use this.
Yeah,
I mean, I know,
absolutely.
But you could... Because it just made me think about that, is that this has been a great dialogue, really more to answer your question, which is really about the use of email, text, not just video, but all of those things are access points that patients want, consumers want. We expect it today.
Yeah.
We expect to be able to email an issue or text someone about an issue that we're having. I have this problem with my washer. Can you fix it? I want to email somebody. Well, I have this problem with my rash. I want to email somebody about it. And thinking about, well, we want a response for that. And yet when you purchase a product, it's one thing that you expect to get that, that service back on it. But you're purchasing healthcare.
Yeah.
So who provides that? Should it be the health plan? Should it be the provider? We want it to be the provider because they know us, right?
Sure.
And I think that's really great. But how does the provider fit that into their day and their busy time?
So does that go back more to the CMS part than the actual provider? Because if there was, say, a code for the amount of time that they do, then would that alleviate some of the physician concern surrounding it?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that if physicians knew that there was compensation involved in that, I think that that would help them be a little bit more alleviated from the fact that I'm not just doing it just for providing free
when
care.
When I could be seeing a patient in person.
Exactly. I am actually providing care, and it is doing... And it's revenue generating. But I do think that the vast majority of physicians do provide care because that's what they want to do.
Right.
You know, and if you have a unique relationship with a physician, they're willing to do that because most physicians want to provide care.
Right.
And they went to medical school because they want to help people. And I think that is a big difference between just being an esoteric, you know, going to an urgent care or just doing a remote televideo visit. If you don't have a personal connection with that physician, then it's not as warm of an interaction.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you do have that personal relationship, you've actually seen that physician maybe once or twice, you develop a relationship with them, then it's easier for them to have that communication with them. And yeah, if they're getting paid for it, great. That's wonderful, because they do have to fund their practice and pay for their staff and all that. But I do think that it is easier now that others are recognizing that there's value there, and CMS recognizes that we need to pay for that.
Right.
I think that will lead to insurance companies paying for it and others paying for it. And, you know, will the patient pay for it? You know, is that the expectation that the patient has?
Right.
Or I don't know. But it's a great point, great observation.
Well, if you don't mind, I might cut some of that into the answer on it, because I think that's all really fascinating about that. Thank you for sharing on that.
Yeah, no, it's a great... you've raised a great point, and it's something that needs to be dealt yeah. with when the service organization.
So welcome back. One thing that I did want to talk about, most people, and we've talked about Sharp Healthcare, we've talked about kind of the Sharp name, but can you tell us a little bit about the history of Sharp Community Medical Group and then how it relates to Sharp Healthcare as a whole?
Yeah, Sharp Community Medical Group was formed back in 1989, and it was formed when Sharp was very small. It was Sharp Memorial and Sharp Cabrillo Hospital at the time, and the reason why it was formed was because Sharp at that time developed a relationship with Rees-Steely Medical Group. Rees-Steely Medical Group was a large medical group that was more affiliated with Mercy Hospital. And Sharp wanted to bring them into their foundation model that they had created. And that was great because it gave Sharp a good footprint for a large multi-specialty medical group that has developed into one of the premier multi-specialty medical groups in the nation, actually, is Sharp Rees-Steely Medical Group. But the independent physicians who were providing care to the vast majority of patients going to Sharp Memorial and Sharp Cabrillo Hospital felt like, well, wait a minute, what are we going to do for all the independent doctors? And Sharp recognized that there wasn't anything that could be done, but they could provide guidance to the independent physicians to say, you guys could form your own IPA, Independent Physician Association. And if you form that group, then you can contract with HMOs and take risk, and you can bear risk and provide value. And so Sharp Healthcare saw the wisdom in saying that there could be two different models. There could be a multi-specialty medical group, and then there could be an independent group of physicians that could help support care in the community of San Diego. So Sharp Community Medical Group was born out of that transition of Rees-Steely coming into Sharp Healthcare, recognizing the need for the independents to coordinate amongst themselves. And so Sharp Community was formed based on that, as Sharp Healthcare grew and Sharp Healthcare went to Chula Vista and basically acquired the community hospital at Chula Vista. There were a number of independent providers down there. They became part of Sharp Community Medical Group. Sharp Healthcare then went to East County and developed a lease arrangement with Grossmont Hospital, which is a district hospital. Many independent providers out there. Sharp looked at that and said, well, why don't you become part of Sharp Community Medical Group? Sure. And so Sharp Community Medical Group grew because of that. And so Sharp Community Medical Group is a large independent medical group. And so most of the physicians are independent. We actually went back in the many years ago as Sharp went up to Murrieta and had a hospital up in Murrieta, and it was called Sharp Murrieta, and the independent doctors were part of Sharp Community Medical Group. And so Sharp Community Medical Group has really helped support the growth of Sharp Healthcare and providing the independent providers an access to the Sharp system in a coordinated fashion. Yeah. So the value that Sharp Community Medical Group has provided to the physicians, the independent physicians, is the HMO contracts. And I wouldn't say it's just more of a contracting vehicle. It's provided an opportunity for us to provide enhanced technology. I mentioned the EMR earlier, right. Is that our physicians who are part of the EMR don't really pay that much for the EMR, and they have all of the backing of Sharp Community Medical Group to support them in that. And we've been able to help support their practice in providing population health tools that are difficult for independent solo practice doctors to manage to. And so Sharp Community, the administrative side of it, looks at all of those things, looks at what's going on in the industry, what's going on in the health plans, all the different metrics that are being asked of individual providers, and putting all that together and providing the resources to our individual physician offices that otherwise really couldn't provide that resource and maintain a private practice.
Yeah. And so that allows then the independent physicians to practice in the hospitals, the privileges to do so there. Does Are they then considered Sharp employees in some way or affiliated officially with Sharp?
Yeah, so they are affiliated with Sharp, exactly. And because we're in California, you know, the health system can't employ doctors. So truly they're independent. And so you can have the staff model, the foundation model where, you know, Sharp basically can run a medical clinic and then they contract with a big, large independent group, Reese Dealey Medical Group, for example, to provide that care in their clinics. But what it allows, the affiliation of Sharp Community with Sharp Healthcare, it allows us to be able to work alongside. And so we have independent doctors that provide care to HMO patients, but those doctors are also providing care to all of the other patients at Sharp Healthcare. So they're fee-for-service Medicare, Medi-Cal, indigent patients that need care, PPO patients. So a lot of those physicians that are part of Sharp County Medical Group are also providing care to all of those patients that are being seen in the Sharp hospitals.
Yeah. And so is that something that's unique to California, that regulation? And so part of the reason I asked too is, so if something happened to me and I needed to go to a Sharp emergency room here, was there a possibility that I'm seeing a Sharp community medical group physician there, or how does that all work?
Yeah, so it's very likely you're being seen by an independent emergency room physician who is part of a group, and that group would be contracted with SCMG. So the unique thing about Sharp Community Medical Group is that Sharp Community Medical Group doesn't employ any physicians, so they're all independent contractors. Yeah. So every physician is contracted. So if you go to the emergency room, you're going to be seen by an ER physician. That ER physician is more than likely part of a medical group, and they will provide care and to all of the patients presenting to the ER. So if that patient has insurance, that medical group will bill that insurance. If the patient doesn't have insurance, then Sharp Healthcare has a contract for that ER to provide that service to them, to the patients that are presenting to them. So.
Yeah, and we've actually had Don Crane on the show a couple times. Once when it was still CAPG, and once just after they had switched to APG, American Physicians Group. And so you touched on the benefits to the physicians and being able to have some power behind them as a group rather than having to represent themselves as these small independent practices. You also mentioned that Sharp Community is a rather large group. How does it compare in size to other IPAs?
So we're one of the largest in the state of California. I think there's maybe Hill Physicians might be bigger than Sharp Community, but other than that, we're probably maybe the second or third largest IPA in the state of California. We have probably about 225 primary care physicians and that are contracted with us, and about 700 specialists, depends on how we count them.
Sure.
We have a relationship with the Rady specialists, so we have access to that for many of our pediatric needs. And so from that perspective, we're one of the largest IPAs. We've been around for 30 years. We have a strong balance sheet and strong financially performing group. It's run by a group of physicians. It's run and owned by the physicians. And so I think that provides unique value. You know, it's contracted the MSO that basically provides all the administrative services is Sharp Healthcare. And so that is part of the unique partnership that exists between Sharp Healthcare and Sharp Community Medical Group, is that it recognizes the value of providing great administrative service for that. And so it's enabled Sharp Community Medical Group to do the wonderful things that it has done.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is that what Sharp Community provides is that it provides access not only to these physicians, but to the patients. And so one of the things that we provide, what Sharp Community prides itself on, is that we love to be where you live, where you work, where you play. And so independent providers have many more locations than basic clinics. And so because the infrastructure isn't as capital intensive, they can be in strip malls, they can be in houses that are in the community. And and that's what SCMG prides itself on being, is that we're basically in the community where you need. And that's a great thing. It's just much more difficult. You know, I'll tell you, the biggest challenge that we face is people wanting to practice independently or in a small practice. And that becomes more of a challenge. It's great for patients because I think patients get great personal care.
Yeah.
Not that they don't in a clinic model, but they do get more of maybe a personalized feeling, because each office is going to be unique. Each office has a unique culture, a unique experience that they foster and they cater to, which creates some appeal to patients in the community, is that I want an office that's more like this versus that. Ethnically, I want one that speaks more Spanish, or I want one that has more of a Arabic feel to it. And we have that opportunity. We had a physician in South Bay who basically redesigned their office. They were leaving a staff model and they went into private practice, and they designed their office so that they could have larger exam rooms because they knew that they treat a more Hispanic type of culture, and that when they are treating patients, they come in with their family members. Sure. So if you have a small exam room, the family members all can't fit in there. Sure. So they purposely designed their office such that their exam rooms would be larger and be able to accommodate that. So that's the unique thing about the independent practice, is you're able to provide that. You're able to make the practice be what you want it to be.
Yeah.
And which is great for patient care and delivery and for the staff that work there. And I think it can be done at a price point that's more appealing to consumers. Our challenge is trying to attract physicians into that model and to say that, you know, the private practice model is not like the dinosaur. It's still around. It still can be successful. And I think it can be successful with groups like Sharp Community Medical Group that, you know, if you're doing it solo by yourself, it is difficult. But if you have a big partner that you're with, like an organization like Sharp Community Medical Group, that can provide a lot of the infrastructure, can provide some of that guidance to you, then it makes it a lot easier. We tried to take some of that burden off of the physician. So just knowledge based on regulations and metrics, on doing reporting, we're able to centralize a lot of that reporting on their behalf. It makes it a lot easier for them to continue in practice. Yeah. We actually set up another company that could basically run a physician office if you want that. So if you want to be in private practice, but you don't want to run your organization, you don't want to worry about if your front desk person calls in sick, who's going to fill that? Well, we have a company that can basically support you in that. So
wow. And yeah. So, and one thing that I think touches on this that you wanted, or that you had mentioned before, was you had mentioned that there's a difference even still between your group as an IPA and like a Kaiser or even the Ries-Thiele model. Can you just briefly touch on the main differences between those groups?
Yeah. So the Kaiser and the Ries-Thiele, they basically are large groups that employ doctors. So it's a little bit easier in one sense, is that they can, being so big, they can say we're advertising for a GI or primary care, and they can employ them. So yeah. They employ them, and they basically have to account for them as an employee and, sure. and work with that. All of the doctors of Sharp Community Medical Group are independent doctors. Yeah. So they're all independent providers contracted directly with the medical group. So Sharp Community, since it doesn't employ doctors, has to contract with their network. So many of our doctors are solo providers. So that's basically they run their own shop.
Yeah.
They're incorporated by themselves and they're running their own business. So the difference is that the Kaiser, Ries-Thiele, Scripps Clinic doctors, they just go in and they practice medicine and they're employed to do that. And you do have administrative physicians that run the group, but then you also have an administrator that's running the practice.
Right.
You're working in a clinic. In our physicians' cases, in the independent, they have to worry about everything. They have to worry about the nurse. They have to worry about the MA. They have to worry about the lease and ordering supplies and all of those types of things. And in addition to getting contracts with payers.
Sure.
So how do they get those contracts? And so what Sharp Community can provide is some of that. We provide access to HMO contracts.
Yeah.
But that is the big difference there.
Employed
is that those
still being an independent
contractor. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think there's value to that because you can make your practice be what you want it to be. And so you're not going to have someone else telling you that this is how you need to do things, right?
Sure.
So you have that flexibility that if you want to take off tomorrow because you have your kid's soccer game that you want to go to, well, you can know that ahead of time and then you can reschedule your patients so that you can do that. If you're an employed physician, then you have a little bit more challenges
right.
to make that happen.
Right.
Whereas if you're self-employed, you have that flexibility. But
plus you get to be a business owner.
You get to be a business owner,
yeah.
which is
right.
great.
Right.
But the challenge there is that physicians didn't go to school to
right.
do that. And,
right.
and but they love it. I think that some of them that have made that transition have really loved it. And employed models isn't for everybody. You know, everyone doesn't like to be an employee.
Yeah.
where someone's telling you what to do. So I think Sharp Community offers that, and independent model offers that. It doesn't have to be Sharp Community, but there's other independent groups. But I think it's becoming harder and harder for physicians to see that, because when you come out of medical school and you come out of residency and you have a number amount of debt that you have to pay off, just being an employee that's going to give you a steady income, there's value to that. I think there's a lot of value to being independent and just rethinking that your earning potential could be whatever you want it to be, right, if you want to work hard at it. And I think that culturally that we need to emphasize that and say that there's value to that, because I think that it provides a good resource to our community, yeah, for patients.
And just really briefly, you had mentioned something earlier about, because this is California, the hospitals or the health system can't employ, right, physicians itself. There, right. Can you explain that just a little bit? Because that's even something that kind of caught my ear.
Yeah. So in California, and I think Minnesota and Texas may be the other two states, that there's this corporate practice medicine law that prevents hospital systems from employing doctors.
Gotcha.
It's believed to be a conflict of interest. Basically, if you employ the doctors, then the doctors are going to do what the hospital system wants. And
sure,
so really looking at that separation to say the doctors should really do what they think is best interest for the patient, and the hospital needs to do what it needs to do to provide care to patients.
Gotcha.
So that difference, you know, creates some challenges, because, you know, the medical group is going to be wanting to do something that is beneficial from their perspective, from the physicians to the patients, versus maybe what the hospital is trying to generate revenue and to sustain itself. So, you know, you kind of have this dichotomy that exists. If you employ all of it, like you do in most states in the U.S., then it becomes a little bit easier. It's aligned. I don't know that it's any easier, because dealing with physicians is still dealing with physicians,
sure,
and dealing with that group. And so if I know that hospital systems that have employed physicians still have challenges in getting the physicians to do what they want. But you are in control of the whole dollar, whereas,
sure,
here in the state of California, there is a separation between what goes to the medical group to provide care for the physicians and to offer attractive benefits for physicians and to attract them, versus what is being the hospital system is getting.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it. So recently, we actually met. I saw you speaking at a conference, the State of Reform Conference. DJ was actually also nice enough to be a guest for us on the show here. But one of the things that I heard you talking about was about risk-bearing organizations, and how they differ from other delegated models. And I know a little bit about it, but even I was learning a little bit, like capitated plus delegated equals risk bearing. And so can you give the audience, who may not necessarily know about those terms, but maybe starting to hear them a little bit more, a little bit of an idea of what a risk bearing organization is and how it differs from those other organizations?
Yeah, so a risk-bearing organization is an organization, could be a medical group, could be a hospital, that's actually taking risk. It's going to get a prepayment for the services for a member. And so you become financially at risk for treating that member for a month. It's usually paid on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
So, you know, you basically bear the risk of care for that patient. In a delegated, and you could have other delegated models where basically you're delegated to do certain functions. You're delegated to do utilization management. You're delegated to do credentialing. You're delegated to do patient experience types of things. So you're not taking full risk. You're just delegated to do certain pieces of that healthcare spectrum.
Gotcha.
Versus in the risk-bearing organization, you're fully at risk for providing that care to that patient wherever they need it. Usually it's limited to your service area, because you can carve out the out of area to the health plan, but it really puts the onus now more on the provision of care to that delegated or to that risk-bearing organization. What's unique about us and Sharp, I think, is, and in San Diego, is that, you know, we have a unique partnership between Sharp Healthcare, who's taking risk for hospitalization services, and medical groups that are taking risk for doctors' visits, if you think about it in that context. And so we are geared towards trying, because if you have that fixed payment, is we have to do what's right for the patient regardless. So we want to be expeditious in our delivery of care because we're getting a fixed amount of money. So we're bearing that risk. So we want to do what's right for the patient. We want to always do what's in the best interest of that patient that's going to have the most effective treatment algorithm for them. And if you have the hospital that's also taking risk for any hospitalization services, then I think you have more of an aligned system that's working together, because our collective input is and incentive is really to do what's best for the patient, to provide the best care in the most cost-effective manner possible for that patient, as opposed to some organizations take full risk. So some take both a global capitation, so they're taking both professional and hospital risk, so where they take that whole risk and want to, again, do what's best for the patient. But that's, again, a risk-bearing organization versus a delegated model.
Yeah. So does kind of the rise of more of these organizations that are willing to take on more risk kind of go hand in hand with the term that we keep hearing more and more of, the population health?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it absolutely does, because I think what you're recognizing is the sophistication of providers to recognize that they need to be more accountable for the care that's being delivered to their patients. And so I think it certainly gives rise to the whole population health concept and the value-based equation that we continue to hear. It's all about how we can provide value to the employer, to the government, whoever's paying, and yet ultimately provide value to the patient. And I think that what you see is that organizations are realizing that that's really what's most important, is that we need to demonstrate that value. And the whole healthcare cost conundrum, which is the rising cost, and we've got to do something about that, has felt, I think, to some degree, is that it's all a fee-for-service world where patients are, you know, the motivation is just to do more, get paid more.
Right.
And I think that the whole accountable care mentality, the whole risk-bearing organization mentality, population health, is all about saying, well, we got to provide value. And we can provide that value. We're the physicians, we're the clinicians, we're best apt to do that because we know how to do that. That goes back to bringing some of the business side of that to the equation, is saying, well, we work together with the clinicians that understand the practice of medicine, understand the context of the business model, to say, well, we have to provide some sort of value equation to that. How do we work together to make that a reality? And I think that's what you see in all of the IHA pay-for-performance measures that came about, was really about trying to demonstrate value to the employers. The purchasers are saying that you're purchasing this insurance, and it's not just because it's all fee-for-service generated. We're actually providing value to that. And I think the IHA Atlas study, which has been published second time now, demonstrates the tremendous value of being in a coordinated risk-bearing organization model that shows that if you're in that type of a model, you're going to get better quality and lower cost of care. And it is because you have sophisticated organizations that have been around for a number of years that have taken managed care contracts, now branching out into Medicare, into PPOs. You know, we have contracts with some of our PPO plans for providing accountable care organization. And it is, again, being accountable for that care delivery.
Yeah. So, and you don't have to throw any of your physicians under the bus or give away kind of the company secrets or anything, but that sounds like it would be far more difficult when you're working with independent physicians. Is that something that they sign up for when they sign up for Sharp Community, or how does that work?
It's a great question, because it is a lot more difficult with independent doctors. And one of the things that we have just started to do, we're in 2 years into this evolution of saying that we're going to set a minimum standard of performance, because we know that we have to demonstrate the value to the insurers, to the employers. And that is something that we've just recently adopted. So when SCMG started, it wasn't something that was there. It was really a contract vehicle. It was a vehicle of being able to get access to HMO contracts. Now we've transformed that to say, well, it can't just be that. It's also about providing value and care delivery to the patients. One of the things that is more challenging with independent docs is that they are providing great care, but if they're not on our EMR, we can't see that sure. as clearly as we could be if they were on ours. So we're working and partnering with our physicians, so even if they're not on our EMR, that we can extract data from their systems to demonstrate the great value that they're providing. But you're absolutely right. It's much more difficult for an independent provider group like ourselves because all of these disparate systems that are there and disparate ways of practicing. What has been great is that we've been able to institute a culture of performance excellence and recognizing that we want to continue that spirit of practicing in a private world. We need to still demonstrate value because we are going to compete with Kaiser. We're going to compete with Rees Dealey. We're going to compete with these great organizations that can demonstrate that value because they have the infrastructure to do that. A solo doc doesn't have that, but Sharp Community can provide that. And yeah. it is definitely much more difficult. We've invested in a number of resources to go out and transform some of these practices. But you have to have a culture within that physician leader that wants to change, that yeah. that physician has to say, I want to be part of that change. And I see that it's not just for my benefit, but for the benefit of the patients and their office staff as well, to be part of that journey where they can continue to provide value to the patients that they see.
Yeah. And I've taken up enough of your time, but just kind of a last question that might seem kind of silly, but in that model and with those things that you've just said, so then is Sharp Community considered the risk-bearing organization, or is the independent physician practice considered the risk-bearing organization?
Yeah, so Sharp Community is actually the risk-bearing organization. So it actually takes the risk on behalf of all those physicians. Gotcha. So the physicians are actually shareholders of the corporation. So ultimately, they bear the risk of it. Right. But from a legal standpoint, the risk-bearing organization is Sharp Community Medical Group. So gotcha. They're actually contracting with the health plans and taking that risk on behalf of their physicians.
Yeah. And I would imagine that it's at a lot of those times that they're very thankful to have somebody with a finance and business background helping them out so that they can, again, focus on their strengths and their specialties. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. It's really been a pleasure, and thanks for giving us so much time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.